This week's episode of Buffy Virgin is brought to you by DennisComics.com. Dennis is a cartoonist who appears on almost every episode of Buffy Virgin. He raves about monsters and recommends great horror movies that no one else has ever heard of. His two short comics in the Halloween issue Devilthink that came out last year, Dennis's original graphic novel Amelia, which is really the thing I should mention first. It's very Lovecraft meets David Cronenberg, and I know other people have said that, but it's a wonderful, dark, and interesting read. Pinup art by Dennis St. John is also featured in issue 5 of Rich Tomasso's She-Wolf, a super interesting read. She-Wolf is beautiful, artsy, and strange. If, when you're listening to Buffy Virgin, if any of Dennis's recommendations for other films and stuff resonate with you at all, then you would absolutely love his comics. Dennis has a really well-developed horror sensibility that comes across in his comics. If you like horror stuff at all, you'd really enjoy his stuff. So get your horror comics fixed at DennisComics.com. That's Dennis with one N, D-E-N-I-S, and comics with an X because it's cool, C-O-M-I-X. In every generation, there is a virgin. He alone will watch the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness for the first time at least once a week. I am a Buffy virgin. Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of Buffy Virgin. My name is Michael Poley. I'm the virgin. I've never seen Buffy except up to season 2, episode 11. And on the show today, we have Travis.
Hi, good afternoon, world.
John.
Hi, my microphone works.
Dennis St. John, a horror cartoonist.
Hi, guys.
And Mary, a Buffy enthusiast.
Hi, everyone.
Mary, since it's your first time on Buffy Virgin, can you tell us a little about when you got into Buffy? You told me before the show that you got a job because of Buffy, and that's fascinating.
Yes, I did. I moved to Boston to be with Matthew, and I had been kind of like hitting the pavement interviewing for a long time, and it was harder, I found, to get a job in Boston than it was in my native state of Montana. And so, you know how when you've tried and you kind of lose enthusiasm, you just get really honest. So yeah. So Matthew would go to work at like 6:30 every morning, and I would, that's when I really got into Buffy, because it was on Fox at like 8 a.m. And so when I was too depressed to look for jobs, I would watch Buffy. And then finally I get this call to work in a behavioral high school, and the employer, her name was Danielle, she called me in and she said, well, what time do you think you can come to work every morning? What hours would be best for you? Do you think you could be here by 9? And I said, and I'm like, that really bites into my Buffy time. And she was like, do you mean Buffy the Vampire Slayer? And I'm like, yeah. I said, it's kind of important to me right now. And she told me later after she hired me that was 100% the reason.
So moving your work hours around in order to watch Buffy got you a job. Like,
yeah.
You would think that being available all the time would get you a job. But in fact, being specific about the time you're available really worked in your favor, which is insane.
Yeah.
I think it's more the passion you showed that you said Buffy is important to me.
It's like what I needed at that time. She loved Buffy as well. And though we never ever watched Buffy together, I think that just the mutual appreciation.
I think we're a community that supports each other.
I think that's true.
Is everybody an outsider in the Buffy world? Is that how it is? We all get to work together.
Finding out how the world really works, Mike.
I feel like, yeah, you could, you're either, yeah, a Buffy fan or you never heard of it.
Yeah.
So to get started, we watched season 2, episode 11, which is Ted. And we have a summary that we'll play to get us into the mood, to get us into Ted. So hold on a moment while we play that.
Season 2, episode 11, Ted. Buffy and Buds jaunt happily down Sunnydale's suburban streets, joking about pop culture and enjoying the recent lack of supernatural activity. Entering Buffy's home, though, they notice the door is mysteriously ajar. Is it a vampire? A demon? A giant bug? No, it's the dad from Problem Child, and he's making out with Buffy's mom! Everyone seems to love Joyce's new boyfriend. Ted the software salesman. Ted the master chef. Ted the mama smoocher. Willow loves geeking out with him. Xander loves scarfing down his cookies and mini pizzas. And Buffy loves finding anything she can to use against him. She just can't stand his overly smooth and likable exterior. Of course, everyone just tells her she isn't being fair to him. Even Angel tells her to go easy on her mom. After all, being lonely isn't easy. But things do start to go seriously wrong when Ted takes Buffy and friends out for mini golf. He lectures Buffy about her bad grades and about the importance of fair play. When he catches Buffy cheating, he starts to go a little crazy and even threatens to hit her. Of course, no one else hears this, and they just won't believe her. Taking matters into her own hands, Buffy stakes out Ted's cubicle at Innatech. There, she learns two important things. For one, if coffee is for closers, then Ted has definitely earned his cup of Sanka. For another, he's planning to marry Buffy's mom. Things continue to deteriorate during dinner at the Summers. Ted denies the engagement, and Buffy says if they do get married, she'd want to kill herself. Like a child in a fairy tale, Buffy is sent to bed without supper. But it is Buffy, so she jumps out the window to chase down vampires. When she gets back, Ted is in her room. He's been messing around in Buffy's Slayer accessories. He's got Buffy's crosses, her stakes, her holy water, and her Slayer diary. He's ready to go downstairs and out her as the delusional vampire-believing-in secretly goth teenager she apparently is. Buffy steps in his way, and Ted makes good on his earlier threat to smack Buffy in the face. Buffy is thrilled to have the justification, and she proceeds to kung fu Ted down the stairs. He must have seen Buffy's deadlights, because he's dead. Shocked and terrified, there's nothing for Buffy and her mom to do but go down to the police station. The cops aren't pressing charges against Buffy yet, but they're thinking about it. Buffy is lost in her guilt, but Willow discovers that Ted has been lacing his cookies with happy pills. Something definitely isn't right, especially since Ted is alive. He's back from the dead, and more controlling and creepy than ever. He plans to take Joyce down to his blast from the past bunker and live there with her, happily ever after. Buffy catches him, though, and this time hits him hard enough to reveal wires. Ted's a robot. Thank goodness. Now Buffy can murder him without guilt. And she does. The end.
That's good.
Thank you, John. That was lovely.
There's so many titles of 90s movies in that summary. I love it.
The Blast from the Past reference was just for you, Travis.
You knew it would drive me crazy.
I had forgotten about Problem Child. That just brought so many wonderful memories to the surface.
Yeah, that was a question I was going to ask, is like, what does everybody know John Ritter from? So I think Problem Child answers it for John.
Yeah, gosh. Three's Company, right? No, is that him?
Yeah, yes, that's him.
Okay. Yeah. Nick at Night, man.
Yeah.
That's my jam.
Three's Company is exceedingly sexual if you watch that. It is such a different John Ritter.
Oh, yeah. No.
So it's very funny to compare his Three's Company John Ritter of him being like 25 or 29 and like middle-aged John Ritter who wants to date your mom.
Yeah. Maybe that's why it was so disturbing. No, John Ritter was amazing. He's a great actor.
He's super funny and committed in this role. It's a great, I think it's the first like actual celebrity guest on this show, at least that I recognize outside of, besides Seth Green, right?
Right. Was he a celebrity guest though, or did he?
No, I think this is like early Seth Green, right?
Yeah.
He was the cha-ching guy.
Early. Yeah.
Right, as we remembered, he is the, Rally's cha-ching guy, obviously. All right, so I'm going to get started with weird noticings and trivia. Then we'll get into questions, themes, predictions, kill count, recommendations, everything we do on the Buffy Virgin podcast. So coming up, John, your first weird noticing, more proof that Angel and Buffy aren't in an appropriate relationship. What's the proof?
So when Buffy brings the Ted problem to Angel and Angel is totally mature about it, it just to me highlights how big a gap there is in their maturity levels. And Angel is like, go easy on your mom. She's a lonely person and loneliness is hard. And Buffy's like, I don't know what that means because I'm 16. And Angel is a more appropriate, like Angel should be dating Buffy's mom more than Buffy should.
Anyway. More than he should be dating Buffy, you mean, right?
Yes, yes. Yes, yes, that's, yes, that makes more sense.
How old is Angel? Is he like, he's like 900 or something, right?
He's 240.
Sorry, that's Edward. Wrong vampire. No.
Edward is off-brand Angel.
Yeah.
Angel is way too old. He totally should be dating Buffy's mom if he's going to date a Buffy-like character. Oh, man, I can't wait to get in these questions. Anyway.
I mean, that's something I think we should talk about when we talk about maturity levels of vampires is, like, we're assuming that vampires continue to emotionally mature after being vamped, but maybe they should date people who are around the age that they are when they get vamped, because physically you don't age, maybe emotionally you don't age.
Well, then how old is he? How old do you think he was?
Still too old.
Because he's still like 20s, right? Like she's not even, she's not a senior. This is her sophomore year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
She hasn't turned 17 yet.
She's not, yeah, no.
Angel was 30 when he was turned. I think, Dennis, your point is, I think if you have a soul, then you mature. But you're right. I think if you're a vampire and you were turned, I don't think much changes.
You get freeze-framed?
I think you get pretty freeze-framed because you don't have a soul.
Well, that's a good question. How many soulful years does Angel have if we only count his ensouled years?
I think he's got over 100, right?
About 100. Yeah.
130. So
really doesn't change the map that much.
But do you think that because he's been alive for 200 years and his history is, highs and lows for him since he became a vampire, do you think that maybe, I don't know about Buffy, but maybe he just doesn't even care. Like, I think if I was around that long and a vampire slayer came around who was Buffy worthy, I just think I'd throw all those worries out the window. Go for it. And well, Buffy,
clearly
she's already destroyed a high school. So like, she's good to go. She may have more emotional maturity. She doesn't always show it, but she's got a lot on her mind.
She does.
Everybody's nodding here, basically.
The child of a, she's growing up in a single parent household. She's definitely way more mature than most people.
One of my favorite Buffy quotes was at the beginning of this episode, Giles saying, "I believe the subtext is rapidly becoming the text." Like that could be used so often in Buffy,
Yeah, that's like the Buffy mantra. I feel like that's the mission statement for the show in many ways.
Do you use it as often as I use the phrase, "I'll jump off that bridge when I come to it"?
I feel like there's more context, more opportunities to use the "jump off the bridge when I come to it" than the subtext one, but those are both amazing quotes. So moving on, John, you said the snacks in the machine are upside down.
This is a really, truly stupid noticing, but...
Thank you for sharing that.
There's the snacks in the vending machine are upside down, which really reminded me of when I was 16 or 17 and I was working at Marion's Pizza in Dayton, Ohio, and it was my job to stock the potato chips on the potato chip shelf. And I had this iconoclastic attitude about things. And I was like, I'm going to put them on upside down. That'll stick it to the man. Take that logo upside down.
You rebel. It's funny you noticed that because I wrote a note about it, but I didn't notice they're upside down. I was just like, wow, 90s chips look so different. I don't remember them looking that different. It's probably because they were upside down and I can't read.
I like there's nothing brands hate more than being put upside down. Like it's so simple to offend brands.
Damn it, you're advertising for WickDonald's, not McDonald's.
John, what was that weird Wario pizza story from working at Marion's? What was the pizza apocalypse story where it like went underneath the conveyor belt?
I don't know what you're referring to. I've got a lot of good Marion's pizza stories in my mind, but...
Hold on a second. First of all, Marion's Pizza, what's that? It's a pizza place in Dayton, Ohio. Second of all, pizza's made on a conveyor belt. I thought that was an animated GIF, but it was truly made on a conveyor belt. Is that true?
Yeah, no, it's a normal food service thing. It's a conveyor oven. They're not very glamorous. They don't put them out, but...
The conveyor belt doesn't put the toppings on. It's not like a cartoon. It's just make a cold pizza and it's the oven. It's the way it times it.
Yeah.
I think the story I'm thinking of is the pizza went on the conveyor belt and then like got stuck.
Oh yeah. No, that was, that would happen. It was called crashing. And if you weren't on top of your job, the pizzas would collide at the end of the conveyor belt. This is really interesting for our listeners. And, we had a coworker whose initials were SF. And he was so negligent about taking the pizzas out of the oven that they not only crashed into each other and got mushed together, but he managed to get the pizza like crammed so far, like in it, like curved down underneath the conveyor belt, which was really funny to us because no one had ever done that before. But in retrospect, it's not that important a story.
But these are the real problems that 16-year-olds are having, is what you're saying, and that Buffy is very emotionally mature.
I think seeing this video helped us establish, like, Travis and I were cracking up at that because we know the person. Mary, not cracking up at all. It's just a pizza story. Like,
I'm like, yeah, it sounds like a mess.
So moving on here to the second part here, Travis, you said Giles and Ms. Callender fight scene occurs simultaneously to the Buffy Ted fight scene and are good foils for one another.
You almost said Giles again, just pointing that out.
I wanted to say Guile, but that's like a Street Fighter 2 character. I'm trying to hold it in.
Is that like when, the horror?
Can
like,
I tell you something, Michael?
Yeah, please.
When you say Giles on the podcast, it makes me wonder if you're just reading the Wikipedia page instead of actually watching the episode. It's like I want to do an honesty check on you. Are you watching the episode or are you reading the deets one wow. by one?
Every episode should start with an honesty test. Did I watch it? Yes, I watched.
I'm just like, it's Giles. It's never Giles.
Mike goes, hangs out with his friends. He's like, I'm totally lost my Buffy virginity, you guys. I totally know what it's like.
It's like sandbags. Yeah.
I can attest, I've watched at least like 6 episodes with Mike okay. in person and via okay. the machines, but it is odd. He's a robotic he's like Mike. Giles. Maybe it was robot Mike.
Maybe.
Wow. So no excuse for mispronouncing Giles at this point. I'll just say it more slowly and purposefully when Giles' name appears.
Right.
You say GIF the right way. How do you say GIF and Giles? How do you mispronounce Giles? You say
GIF. Literally the way it's written, it looks like Giles to me, not Giles. There's a J sound coming from this G that, anyway, that just looks weird. I say it wrong every time because I'm trying to pronounce it the way it's written.
How do you feel about him as a character?
Oh, he's my favorite character. He reminds me the most of Travis. It feels like hanging out with Travis every time I see Giles do anything. I love it.
Yeah. Okay. I just wondered if it was like on purpose because you didn't care for him, which would be weird because he's probably why almost everybody loves Buffy.
I think Giles and Willow are the reasons why people watch Buffy. Those are the best characters.
Yeah. I think Willow plays like you're like, yeah, she would be the best friend. And Giles, you're like, I could kind of imagine him just kind of showing up at my house and my own negligent father walking out. And you're like, yeah, I would replace him with Giles.
Well, he's kind of like
a great dad.
He's like the Doc Brown character, right? That like, you know, makes everything crazy because he lives in this alternate reality where vampires are real. And then everyone can kind of pretend that that world doesn't exist except when Giles is around because it's very real.
Yes.
He's great.
Well, he's like the most responsible adult because he's the only adult who really knows what's actually going on in Sunnydale. Yeah. That's his key.
Yeah.
Is that the key?
So, Jenny.
That's more complicated than that, apparently.
So, related to that Giles and Callender fight scene, I noticed Jenny Callender's a real person. Get away from me, Giles! Like, I'm shocked that she remembers what happened in the Dark Age, and she's like, "Maybe I shouldn't hang out with you so much. Every time I hang out with you, something terrible happens."
Yeah,
that's what everyone in the school should be saying.
there's actual emotional consequences for something, whereas like if we look at Joyce's. Over the last episode and then these next two, there's not a lot of consistent character traits that she has, right? She's three entirely different types of mom in What's My Line, Ted and FedEx.
That sounds like an amazing BuzzFeed essay.
I totally agree with that. Because one of the things that drives me crazy about this episode is that she's being a terrible mom.
Yeah, like, no, when
like
she's
hands down the one parent rule that I think is true is that if your kid tells you something, you believe them or like you give it all, especially something serious. I mean, Sesame Street taught us that.
Yeah, totally.
You're like, and she was like, oh no, he would never do that.
Right, and she's like, just
we've
started
known
dating
him for 2 minutes,
right? But that's because she's eating those happy cookies, right?
That is true. My friend pointed that out when we were talking about it at lunch this week.
She's probably the most drugged up.
Yeah, he's probably given her all sorts of happy snacks. Sorry. Sorry about that.
Where she's just on her bed screaming, vomiting, and shaking where she's been crying. That would be an amazing cutscene.
Yeah, we don't really see what like her come down is. We just get the watching Thelma and Louise with her daughter reflection.
Travis, you're next. Is this a fun fight where they just do like just good pacing? That's all I was saying with the simultaneous fights.
No, I thought it was well put together. It's like a polished episode.
Very polished.
It's like they were so excited that Ritter was going to be on it. They were like, we better write this one. And then the next one, you said, Jenny doesn't understand how dangerous Sunnydale is.
It's baffling. She shows up in the middle of the night to hang out with Giles and is, of course, attacked. And she has all these bad things happen to her, and she's still kind of... And she knows what's going on, too. She's the other adult who knows what's going on, but has, like, zero, I don't know, battle sense. I'm not sure what it is. But it's used to comic effect in this episode.
So I kind of... Go ahead.
Oh, I really like the mini golf set. And I was wondering if you guys thought that was a real golf set in LA somewhere or if it was built for the show. The cuckoo clock.
It's got to be real.
It's probably a set. Probably on a studio lot.
I've never seen... Like, a lot of it looked real, but I've never seen a cuckoo clock like that at mini golf. But most of it looked real.
Well, I guess we need to do a tour of LA golf courses because probably there are some.
I feel like that's something you can Google. The internet knows everything.
Mm.
Yeah, Dennis, why even ask?
Is just that against the rules?
No, you can Google.
We can only use technology from the 90s.
Okay, fair enough. I'll send in.
You have to use whatever browser.
I'll send a certified letter.
Skim it. Don't you have to hack into the city council?
Yeah. You have to do what Willow would do, hack into the city council and the police.
And then find everything from there.
So you guys will appreciate this because at this point I wrote down what I thought Ted was because I was like, I don't know what's going on with this story, but I assumed Ted was the witch in the Hansel and Gretel story at this point in the episode.
Whoa.
Based on all the cookies that he's making everybody eat. And then there was like...
Wow.
These sweets on the morning for Joyce, and she's like, Buffy, have one of the things that Ted made. I'm like, okay, this is a Hansel and Gretel story. He's a witch. There's going to be a big oven at the end of this. And I was totally wrong, but that's what I assumed at this point.
I kind of like that one better. That's a better ending.
Yeah.
I think the robot stuff doesn't really work because, like, as much as I always sing the praises of the makeup guy, John Volich, right? Is that his name? Like, I think if you're a really good monster guy, you're not necessarily a good robot guy because it's like the difference between organic shapes versus mechanical shapes. So that's also, I think, why they hold off the robot reveal for so long and they don't like go full robot because, like, I mean, think back to when Willow dates a robot, like, their robot effects just are not as good as their monster effects.
Yeah, it sounds like a separate subgenre of effects, the robo effects genre, and they should have hired somebody that worked on Blade Runner to come in or something and figure it out.
Yeah.
My next kind of observation, I got three of these right here. I love the totally helpful and immediately trusting coworker that talks smack at the water cooler when Buffy goes to investigate, Ted, and it's like, this guy's like, hey, you work here? Cool. I'm immediately talk shit about somebody. And like, that's amazing. And I have that amazing ability, where I've worked places sometimes for a day or even less where people think I've worked there forever. And I totally like, I feel like I've been in that before, like, you know, working somewhere for half a day and someone's like, oh man, hey, welcome to the team. And then immediately share something effed up.
I assume that was normal. Like, I've never worked in a big office, but that's my imagination of it, is that like temps show up all the time and people are always like having an opportunity to say, don't talk to Kathy. She's messed up.
I also like Ted's a computer genius or whatever. He built himself, I guess. And like, he's a telemarketer. He's not like a high end, like tech guy. He's doing like cold calls,
but he's the best at it.
He's not good enough to promote himself to a different, like, he's not in Silicon Valley, is all I'm
but
saying.
Isn't that the proof of great AI, is that he's good at sales?
I think he's good at the cookies. I bet he shows up with like all sorts of treats. I think he uses that drug more than we think he does.
He doesn't just cold call. He like cold mails cookies.
Yeah, I think so. I think
when
all
I eat
his
a cookie,
is
that guy
based on that.
On those mini pizzas.
I eat a mini pizza if it came in the mail.
Yeah, I would too.
What?
From a stranger?
Good. Wait, just food in the mail? You guys like uncooked food in the mail? You'd eat it?
I'd be like,
if it was packaged nicely. If it was
maybe
like,
I signed up for Blue Bonnet and I forgot.
If it was like a smushed up, weird, greasy envelope, probably not. But if it was like, you know, from your friends at Software Tech, I'd be like, yeah.
I'd pizza. Consider it, yeah.
And that's how the school bought all these new computers from John.
So moving on here, I think Ted has, when they discover Ted's basement, he has a rad vintage 50s apartment in a secret basement. And that was so awesome. I thought Mary would appreciate that. So I wanted to call out the 50s.
No, this is, you're right on the money there. That is definitely why Ted is one of my all time. It's in my top five of all Buffy episodes. I watch it like casually just for fun all the time. And mostly because of the creepy bunker. Like, it's like recreating Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood in your basement, except for the closet filled with dead women.
Yeah, and then we don't see it. They would just we just get Xander's impression, like, whoop, that's not right for TV.
Which was classic Xander, too.
It all makes
sense. Like, don't go in there.
Like, are they just loose in the closet, or are they, like, packed somehow?
I always imagine they were, like, hanging up on hangers. I don't know. That's just my imagination, since they never let us see it.
Yeah, I've wondered also, like, are they frozen? Like, he immediately recognizes what they are, and Ted is obviously, like, an OCD robot, so he wouldn't, like, just have them, like, loose and rotting on the ground, right? Like,
right, I imagine, like, mummified, maybe.
Hmm.
Yeah, I imagine mummified wearing a dress.
Yeah, like a 1950-something.
Like a wedding dress?
Maybe.
Or a cocktail dress.
But he said when he tried to bring Joyce back with him, he said, I want you to move into my house. I have clothes for you. Like, I assume that he has like a whole little freaky little thing going on.
Yeah. He also said they're your size. They're always your size.
They're always your size. Yeah.
So he picks his like future wives based on their like measurements.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump into predictions right now, but I do feel like this is never coming back. None of this amazing stuff ever coming back. And it's a shame because it's so rad and weird. Like, who is this guy? So, John, you're saying Ted is Bluebeard. That's your observation here.
Yeah, you guys know Bluebeard, right?
Please remind us, though.
I've played Bluebeard for you, John.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You were Bluebeard in the movie that we made in college. That's right.
I did this.
So, yeah, I did a that weird sort of semi-silent music video thing for Bluebeard in college. But no, Bluebeard is the fairy tale of the lady. She gets married off to a rich guy. Rich guy says, you may enter any room in my castle, and here's the keys, except don't go in this room. And she goes in there and saw the heads of his dead wives that he's murdered. And nice. So then she's rescued by some dudes, except in the Angela Carter version where she's rescued by her mom.
I was not familiar with Bluebeard.
Bloody Chamber.
No, thanks for the re-up on Bluebeard. Yeah. Travis, you're saying the final shot of Giles and Jenny is framed perfectly for 4:3 aspect ratio.
Yeah, just nerding out on old-timey 4:3 aspect ratios. It's viewed through a window into the library, and it's a perfect square, and it looks great. That would make no sense on widescreen.
No, that's well observed, since John shared an HD version of, not this episode, but Bad Eggs with us, a 16:9 version. And yeah, that's a really unusual thing to exist. Like, this is totally 4:3 days. John, your last question here, what was Ted's plan for Buffy?
Yeah, so like, maybe you guys have some insight into this, but like, I don't know if Ted was planning to kill Buffy all along, or maybe he was going to keep her as a backup wife. But like, was he planning on taking Buffy down into the bunker and having Buffy as a daughter down there? It doesn't seem like that was really a good long-term plan. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Really, think about it. I think he was planning on ditching Buffy somehow or some way. I don't think he thought about her.
Why does he need Buffy to do stuff? Like, why does he care if she gets good grades or any, I mean, is that just because he's, you know, he's wired that way, as he says?
I think it's exactly that he's wired that way. Because he wired himself with like 1950s protocol.
I don't think it makes any sense for Ted to try and help Buffy with her grades, remind her about these problems, and be so insistent about it, right? It's really nuts. I guess it's.
Well, he's probably got some sort of dad mode subroutine that the original Ted built but never got to activate, and it's activating now for the first time.
Ooh, I like that. That's good.
So I don't know what, he's probably just running the routine, doesn't have a plan.
Is that what happens when you have children? Your dad mode just...
I'm sure the original Ted had the dad mode planned.
All right, so that's the end of Weird Noticings. John, do you want to check with our live audience to see if there's anything going on that we need to connect with? We want to interact with our audience, of course.
There is nothing going on with our audience that I am able to read because I'm not able to sign into Buffy or into Facebook as Buffy Virgin, so I can't see all the comments. And I can't see any of the comment.
All right, I'm seeing that there are two live viewers, so that's probably me right now. And I see a like from Kara Greenberg.
Yay!
Hi,
Kara.
And then when I click into the link here, I see 139 people reached, 49 views, 2 concurrent, but no comments. All right, great. So the live feature is going great. I'm really impressed with the interaction here. We'll look at all the statistics later.
I tried to promote it some over the week.
You know what? Sundays might be a weird time. Maybe we have to do this on like a Tuesday or a Thursday when people have less going on.
So anyway, I have a couple more weird noticings that I didn't get.
Please. Right.
Let's see. Where are they? Because I have a bunch of notes. Sorry. How do you think... all right. John Ritter starts talking about goblins. And like, she definitely never wrote about goblins. Like, that's he clearly just skimmed her diary because she's fought a lot of things, but she hasn't fought any goblins. What a jerk. Get your monster straight.
Yeah, he's a pretty insensitive robot when he's going through her stuff. Yeah. I was amazed at how much he'd been able to figure out, though, in like an afternoon.
Maybe he's got like super speed reading and
like Johnny
categorizing
Five.
Of info.
Yeah, and is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, is it really just like Buffy's journals? Is that what the show is based on? Are we going to find that out later? Oh, that's a prediction. I'll wait till predictions here. Sorry.
That's and we also know from other people reading her diary that she writes, she abbreviates Angel to A to keep it secret, but she doesn't abbreviate being a Vampire Slayer, right?
Sorry, I snorted. That's true.
But if you abbreviate,
I'm just thinking about like all of my journals in high school, and I'm like, yeah, she probably could have done a better job with that. Like a real 16-year-old girl would have been a little more thorough.
They would have written a complicated code, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I had been a vampire slayer in high school, I would have come up with like a much better code than that.
But we know from seeing other shots of Buffy's room that like her weaponry and stuff is barely ever hidden. It's like, just hope mom never opens that big chest.
Yeah, her mom doesn't ask very many questions. Like, I think her mom even sits on that chest sometimes and talks to her, right? Like, has
probably,
a little mom-to-daughter chit-chat. Never wonders, why is this old creepy trunk in your room? I don't remember buying this.
When did you become so into antiques?
Yeah.
She goes antiquing with Giles. That's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Spike, yeah.
Oh, was it two episodes ago when we were talking about antiques? It's embarrassing to say this, but when my abbreviation of teaks, I'd forgotten I said that. And when I heard it, I cracked myself up and nobody else laughed at all. Like,
I assumed you were just being ironic.
I did. I was making a joke. I just forgot I made that joke. So it was a joke I surprised myself with. That's all.
That's the best kind.
All right. Any other observations, Dennis, from Ted?
My notes are too jumbled. Sorry.
Right. You should have typewritten those. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to move on here to questions. If you come up with anything, then let's bring it up. So, questions for the group. So this is larger questions, though. I think we cover some of these. So, if we covered anything, let's just skip through it. So, John's obvious question, this is a great one. How did you react to your parents dating? We can skip if it cuts too deep. So I love this question. I thought, because everything about this episode totally, like, for a kid whose parents were divorced and have been well divorced since watching this episode, I still responded to this. It felt really, really real to me. Because, like, when your parents date, this is, like, going way back, but, like, when your parents date, they're always trying to introduce their new partner as amazing, but you don't have any of the information that they have. They're just like, hey, meet someone new. They're amazing, right? Like Ted's amazing. It's like, they can do all these things, like whatever they do. It's like, they're an accountant, they're a dancer, they're, you know, they're good at whatever it is. They're amazing, because everyone can be portrayed as amazing, but you don't have any of the information your parents have. And like, you can't have any commentary about their choices. Meanwhile, they totally comment on all your choices related to dating, but like they're so good at controlling all the information about who you're with about who they're with rather. So like, I responded to the fact that like, Ted gets portrayed as this amazing person, and you could disagree, but like, there's no way for you to connect with your parents about how you could disagree about something. And like, just feeling really powerless to stop your parents from dating someone that you're only kind of into. And like, they want you to, you know, the improv game they're playing is like, enthusiastically agree with me that this person's amazing. And you're like, yeah, they're great. But like, you don't know them from beyond what's presented. Anyway, that's the end of my little bit, but like, totally connected with Buffy on this. It was very well written.
No, that's a good bit. And also, it feels all of a sudden, but we don't really know what our parents do when we're not around. So like, it always felt out of all of a sudden. Like, you don't really, like, your parents do their thing while you're at school, and they're meeting people. And my parents are divorced, and they're much older. But I remember my father would just call me out of the blue every once in a while and be like, it's never happened before, but I'm in love. And you'd be like, that's really weird. It never worked out.
Yeah, I'm only dealing with this for the first time as an adult, and I totally don't like it that my dad's dating. Like, I mean, it's very, maybe I shouldn't
be weird
saying this on Facebook Live. Not that he would get on Facebook Live, but I mean, it's just everything about it is uncomfortable.
It's odd.
Right. Normally, we cut things from the show, but now we'll have no choice.
Yeah. When Mike told me he was like, you know, Mike said he wanted to do this one live, I was like, no problem. And then I realized that we were going to have this conversation. I was like, oh, that's going to make things different.
And Dennis can't control himself.
Yeah, I think it's just complicated, because when you're a kid or an adolescent in your parents' state, you don't know what normal is. And you also don't have the information, and you're not emotionally mature. So it's really tough to process, even under the best of circumstances, you know, how things would go.
Yeah, actually, I think Buffy handles it quite well.
Well, she does, like, you know, beat him up.
Fair enough.
I wouldn't call that handling it that well.
But he had been very aggressive.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, she should defend herself, but... I don't know if I would say Buffy handled it that well, but
I think she could have been so
much worse. It could have been so much worse.
Yeah. It is funny the way the show just the way this episode's structured, where they are like, what happens if Buffy kills a real human? And then they like immediately can walk that back.
Totally. Right?
But just the fact that she murders somebody not knowing that they're like anything else but a person, like, is it an intense line that they immediately are able to be like, no, it's not true, it's fine.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes, Buffy should go to jail, even if this turns out to be a supernatural thing later. Like, that was a really F decision of her part. But the show likes doing this. It likes playing around with one person is suspicious, but nobody else is. And like, this is a game that Buffy likes to play. And I can't immediately think of the last time we played this game in the episode in Buffy, but I feel like it's been played like four times now, where one person's suspicious, but no one else is. Oh, Travis, you're smiling. You got which episode?
I got Ford. I got iRobot Eugene. And then we got the Praying Mantis lady, Miss, whoever she is. And...
Yep. So Sunset Club Ford, because Buffy's into him and everyone's like suspicious except for her.
Sorry, my dog's attacking.
Oh, sure. Yeah. The praying mantis.
He's just like licking, attacking.
Praying mantis.
Praying mantis lady, where everyone's suspicious except Xander. And then
Willow's boyfriend, rather.
Yep. I robot you, Jane.
Yeah.
A bad guy.
John says, related to above, did anyone know anyone who does the Michigan J Frog thing?
So like a friend of mine, I thought this was so well put, like recently described her parents as being Michigan J Frog, because, you know, whenever she brings her parents in front of her parents are suddenly, you know, really nice and supportive. And it's like, why can't you be the horrible people that you are in private in front of my friends? like you know, Michigan J. Frog, the singing frog in the Warner Brothers cartoons. I thought that was a really apt analogy. I mean, my parents aren't like that, but the whole thing, like, do you have anybody in your life that's like that? That's like, they act one way in private and you tell everybody about it and then they bring it out.
I literally did the Michigan J. Frog thing one time to avoid getting in a fight with a drunk guy at a party once. I was really drunk also, but he accused me of peeing on his bike, which I didn't do. And like, he was like a weird stranger at the party who was angry and kind of violent the whole time. So when he started to try to fight me, apparently, I have no memory of this, I like stared blankly at him for a couple seconds and then like did that song and dance and like walked out the door that way to avoid a fight. So.
Wow, that's not what I meant, but that's a really good story, Dennis.
Wow.
So if you guys want a little tip on how to avoid drunk altercations.
That's a good tip.
So do like a 20s style like dance on a, like as if you're on a stage?
Yeah.
What is the move? What's the move?
What's the move? It's a high kick and you go like this and you go, "Hello my baby, hello my honey, hello my ragtime gal, oh baby." And by that time you're out the door.
Are you going to remember doing that this time?
That I did it right now? Yeah.
I totally believe this because you have that in your memory. It's not like you had to look that up.
Right, yeah. So Travis, no, that song I know pretty well.
So, Travis, the next thing you hear is about where we seen John Ritter first, and I think we all kind of answered that question at the start. Then, John, you're saying, did our virgin see it coming? What do you mean?
You kind of answered this already. Did you know he was a robot until it was revealed? Did you see it? Because there's these little hints that he's a robot where they, like, he says, "I'm not wired that way," like five times. Buffy refers to him as being Stepford Wivesy.
Which is an interesting reversal, right? Like, yeah. She refers to her mom being Stepford Wivesy, but like, he's the robot, right?
Right.
Yeah, I wrote that down because I thought that was a funny little joke.
So I just want, you said you thought he was going to be the Hansel and Gretel witch, which I think is an awesome idea. So you didn't see it coming is what I'm getting out of that.
No, I didn't see the robot thing coming at all. I didn't feel like the episode played towards that. And I was even surprised, delightfully surprised by the banality of his software job where he's just really good at software. I can't imagine where this is going. So the cyborg thing was a little surprise.
I'm pretty impressed you noticed the food. I didn't notice the food when I first, like, when it was the food, the cookies at the end, I was like, what?
Well, I'm suspicious of everybody who appears in the Buffy world immediately, like Buffy is. But I was looking at the details though right in front of me, which was stupid. I should have just said, like, it's been a long time since there's been a robot on the show, and then assumed it was a robot.
That's a good call. I think it also plays well on the whole, like, Joyce has that recurring bit about Buffy not eating, right? Which she usually plays for laughs, even though it's like, the theory is that her daughter is anorexic, I guess. But like, that is kind of what saves her from the hypnosis, is like, she doesn't eat. What do we think of that?
Yeah, she never eats.
We also should bring up the fact that in this episode, she talks about sensing someone's, like, sort of goodness or evilness. And that's one of her Slayer senses. And we talked about that earlier. We talked about that in the first episode, actually. But this is another episode. I think we talked about that also with Kendra as well. Kendra had Willie on the ground and was saying, "This one's dirty. I can feel it or sense it or whatever." So this is another cool Slayer sense episode.
So next question here, John, you're saying to Travis, is Demeturin a real drug? Can you detect it with a microscope? Does it have this effect?
I don't think Demeturin's a real drug. You definitely can't see it in a microscope. You would see a color change, but you don't need a microscope to see that if you're testing someone for drugs.
Well, she tests the cookies. She's looking at the cookies in a microscope, and she's like, "It's got drugs in it."
But you can't see drugs in it.
Embryos. And she does have, like, some beakers of, like, colored fluid out as well, so I guess there's that.
Was have a beaker and then add a few drops to it, and if there was a color change, she'd go, "Oh my God, Demeturin." That's what should have happened. Use a color change. But
I have to admit I did Google Demeturin, and the only thing that comes up is the Buffy wiki. It has its own page.
Oh, nice. Interesting. Maybe this drug gets used again. Okay, go into my prophecies. All right.
It's a prediction, not a prophecy. Unless you've been upgraded lately.
Sorry. John, you're saying, do you think Giles deserves to get Ms. Calendar back?
So, yeah. So, like, I thought this was almost, like, because I think this episode's pretty strong overall, but I thought it felt a little cheap because the Dark Age really hammered home that Giles is going to lose something in his present because of something that he did in his past. And it's really heavy message about regret. And then
he might have lost a kidney, though. He got shot right in it.
Right. I mean, and so, like, they have Ms. Calendar, like, shoot him with an arrow. So I guess they're, like, even is what we're supposed to get from that. Like, but it's like a comedy shooting. It's not, like, nearly as heavy. I just kind of feel like Giles needs to suffer a little more until I feel like he's good enough for Ms. Calendar again.
I feel embarrassed for Ms. Calendar that she, like, not the thing about shooting Giles, but, like, that her, like, quip before shooting him was, like, that's the kind of quip you'd be embarrassed about, like, when the story gets told, that she says, like, say goodnight, big boy. Like, not the best quip in the world.
Well, this episode, it's funny, Xander brings up the fact that Giles, or no, is it Cordelia? Yeah, Cordelia brings up the fact that Giles was partly responsible for somebody's death. It was pretty good.
Travis, you got the next one here. You said, should Buffy have lost so easily to Ted? He did sneak attack her, though.
Yeah, I was sort of struggling with that. Ted's this robotic super monster. He sneak attacked her. He sneak attacked her after she'd been out fighting already, right? So she was already tired. So at first I was like, well, she's getting beat up pretty easily. But then again, a lot of it was surprise. And she was already tired. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I don't think Ted was built to fight, right? Like, he's not a fight droid. So
he's a sales droid.
I think he's a protocol droid, right?
Seems like there's an opportunity for a Star Trek reference here, but you know.
Yeah, I was doing, but I thought better of it.
Is Data strong? Isn't Data a very strong person?
Yeah, he's way strong. Yeah.
But is he a fighter? He's more of a thinker than a fighter, right?
You know, he's whatever he needs to be. He's whatever the situation calls for.
He's a fighter, a thinker, a lover.
He's fully functional.
I feel like the D&D character sheet for Ted has a pretty low fight score. It's like he gets one, like his first attack gets to be really strong, but he always goes with the slap first, right? For some reason, because it's his dad move. And then after that, like, it just diminishes in power. Like, it's like he rolls one less die every time after the first time.
Do all D&D characters have a dad move? Is that how D&D works?
No, just the
dad D&D version.
Just the Ted character.
He definitely doesn't have a good fight repertoire. He's got, like, one move. But, I don't know. It was a bit strange.
So, my next observation question here for everybody. So, Buffy's dating a guy, Angel, who has his own apartment. Did you ever date someone who had their own apartment, or were you the apartment guy? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Do you mean in high school? Because it's, like, not a big deal to date someone with their own apartment when you're an adult, Mike.
Right. It's not a big deal. But in high school, it would be a huge deal to date someone with their own apartment, because that's, like, you can avoid reality completely. Like, you know, you're constantly, I mean, the whole thing with kids and cars, right, and those being all these weird makeout spots is like, you don't have a place to go. But Angel's got his own apartment. They should probably go there all the time.
Technically, isn't it like a tomb?
That's not clear. We've had a lot of conversations about Angel's weird apartment and where it is.
We've never seen it
on the outside.
Yeah, we've never seen an exterior.
I think it's like
at least for a couple more weeks.
I think it's like a shipping container.
Maybe it's a shipping container. It's a basement. Yeah.
We've seen people walk into it. It's a basement apartment.
My one of my friends, her senior year in high school, her parents moved. So they let her get an apartment with her older sister across the street from the high school. I didn't date her. But we did take advantage of that apartment. There were probably things that would not have happened for a 17, 18-year-old person that did, because we were living... We were at an apartment that was often filled with young college age individuals who were going to the college that was three blocks this way, and the high school was one block that way. It was fun.
That sounds amazing. I feel like that should be a thing that's provided to high school students. There should be like an apartment that's just like belongs to the high school, right? That just should be everyone can use.
Yeah. This apartment was very much not monitored in any way.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't feel like we had access to an apartment really in high school. I feel like even with all my dad's rental units, we didn't really have access to like an empty apartment.
No, we didn't. We had a friend who ended up in an apartment by himself, and that did not, that was not good for anybody, I don't think. The lack of supervision was not great.
Yeah, it's like you're too soon to have a place of your own, and you only want to do everything your parents won't let you do when you have an apartment.
Exactly.
Okay, so moving on to this next one here. John, what would happen if Ted got to out Buffy as delusional? What would happen if Ted won, I guess?
Yeah, or like, wouldn't Buffy just be like, nope, vampires are real. Can't send me to the insane asylum because here's one. Like, I feel like she would win that. And like, I feel like that if the story went in that direction, it would be really fascinating because then, you know, Joyce finds out she's the Slayer. You know, finds out vampires are real because at that point, if you push Buffy into a corner, she has to just be like, well, I can't be in an asylum because then I can't slay vampires. So she has to just tell everybody vampires are real. I feel like that story goes a really weird, interesting place.
I agree. Besides, Buffy has way more people. Like, Joyce never has people. And Ted was just Ted. Like, no one liked him at his office. So it was just two people. Like...
Yeah, but they're adults, right? She's a kid. Like, adults can totally, like, oh, you're...
Yeah, but she's got Giles. And she's got...
Miss Calendar.
Yeah, yeah, Giles'
calendar.
How do you think Giles would do at the sanity hearing for Buffy?
I also think in the 90s in California, it was pretty hard to lock somebody in an insane asylum. You couldn't just do it based on the evidence of a diary.
This is like an old school fear.
You have to be like a 5150 to even get like a mandatory 72-hour psych eval. And there you have to be like proven a danger to yourself and others. Which, I mean, Buffy obviously is because she killed Ted. So her killing Ted probably would have helped Ted's case of her going into insane asylum.
But not if it was self-defense.
Yeah.
Maybe Ted threw that fight. Maybe he's playing the long game.
If your mom's boyfriend smacks you, can you kill them? That's crazy. Yes. Oh, what?
It's not okay. She was defending herself. Here's the thing I don't get, because she felt really bad after she killed him, but she is super, super strong. He should not have been able to handle her first punch. There shouldn't have even been a fight, so she should have known right away that something was up. But then there was like that 5 minutes of the episode where she's like, I killed someone, my whole life is different.
Yeah. Maybe she's just too wrapped up in the grief of it to like analyze the fight.
Oh man, that drive.
I feel like
Joyce,
a Slayer would analyze so the fight.
That drive with Joyce when they're not talking because she may have killed her boyfriend.
Yeah, that's a pretty messed up drive.
I love that. That's one of my favorite scenes of this episode.
It's an amazing scene to have in the series. Just you can it, the fact that it exists. It's such a strange plot. Such a strange thing to have happened in a plot of any TV show. It's pretty special.
So John, I guess related to this,
I think Joyce kind of knows. I think she's in denial, but I think she knows what's up with Buffy.
Joyce is
like all parents
into denial. Joyce is all about denial.
Yeah.
She's the queen of the denial.
She is the queen of the denial.
John, your next question goes right into it. You're saying, what would happen if Ted was just a normal abusive guy? Would Buffy still have killed him?
I think yes, right? Because like, I think up to the point where Buffy does kill him, even after that, everything is going, the story more or less proceeds exactly as though Ted were just abusive, right? And so I think that the moral of the story here, for better, for worse, for whatever you want to take it, is that if, you know, Joyce did date an abusive guy, Buffy would just murder him.
Yeah.
No, Buffy, if Ted was powerful, he would have been knocked out with that first punch. So I don't think he would have been killed. If Ted wasn't super powerful, if he was just a normal human, you're right. He would have just been knocked out and not died. And that would have been enough of a deterrent. Talk about a deterrent.
So one weird Ted observation here, but I'm curious what people think. Have you ever heard anyone say or had the urge to say, "Daddy's here"?
as a couple, that was messed up.
Hello, Daddy.
Hey, Daddy's here.
Hello, Daddy.
Matthew says that night when he gets home.
Okay.
Sorry, and that got weird.
And everybody feels comforted when he says that. Oh, yeah. No. Okay.
If you are somebody's biological father and you're coming home, or, you know, an adopted father, fine. If you're somebody's father and you're coming home, then you can say Daddy's here. But in no other context is that allowed. I feel like it's absolutely creepy, no matter in any other context whatsoever.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy, even if you are Daddy and you're coming home. Normal people just walk in the door. I was joking. Matthew doesn't see that when he comes home.
Well, I reacted because I feel like no one ever feels comfortable saying that, especially a boyfriend. That was really crazy. But that's probably just to make the viewer hate Ted for him to have said that at all.
Yeah.
I guess,
and I think they were showing
pets.
That he was being super familiar in a super weird way.
So Travis, your next thing in the ethics, is the ethics of killing bad monsters versus humans too simplistic in Buffy?
Yeah. That's what this episode to me is super important with that, that concept, because this is the first time Buffy could have accidentally killed a human. I don't think up until now she's accidentally endangered human lives. Hate to bring up Owen, but Owen, you know, she felt somewhat guilty about Owen being in danger back in season one, but she doesn't really wrestle. I don't know. I guess all the bad guys, all the monsters of the week up until now, except for those two high school kids from the Frankenstein episode, she doesn't kill them. One of them, I think, does die, but the other one just goes to jail. A lot of the monsters of the week do end up just dead. I guess most of the monsters of the week are murderers, and we always have a kill count. So I think that that sort of backs that up. But I was just sort of, this was the first time things got kind of murky, which was good. But I don't know if you think that the show is a show doing enough to deal with the ethics of how Buffy has to do her job, or you think that they're just kind of whitewashing things.
I have a hard time with it because I'm not sure if it's an interesting metaphor. Like, what? I mean, I guess it's the idea of moral ambiguity generally, but like, it's not like monsters are real. So I'm not sure how it's an interesting idea outside the context of the show. Like, and like, I mean, like, I never have to think about whether or not it's okay to kill somebody because they're a monster.
We're all monsters, Joe.
Is that a metaphor for something?
Well, in the show, they make it really simple, where it's like, if you kill a human, that's bad. Killing a monster is good. Buffy accidentally kills a human, or we think is a human, and like, that's bad, right? And she's meant morally to suffer for it in this episode, right? Like, that's pretty simple. Like, there haven't been any like monsters that she's killed that we've been concerned about. Just like, yep, that thing should be dead.
Yeah, I'm just sort of lamenting the simple moral code or the simple moral ethics of the show.
You're talking about the show right now, right? You're not
exactly
talking about
the show right now. There's a lot more dimension. Man.
There's a lot of dimensions. Yeah,
there's a lot of dimensions.
Some of them are hell dimensions.
Some are hell dimensions. Well, anyways, I'm just saying the show. It's a lot more interesting and a lot more true to life when there's lots of degrees of good, bad. You know.
The one with the gun. Yeah. Good, bad. I'm the one with the gun.
Lots of degrees of ugliness as well. That's right. Matt, maybe I'm just saying this is important just because it's the first episode where they try to inject some sort of moral compass or some framework for dealing with just killing your problems. That's all.
And then, Travis, you have another thing that I think sounds somewhat similar, but a little different. Are we too desensitized to men being violent? Because Joyce at the end is pretty fine, though emotionally traumatized, but not like, oh man, I'll never date again. You think the episode should end with talk therapy?
Well, I'm just saying, Joyce was, basically, I think the basic premise, I'm not sure, Joyce thinks that this was just some like very violent man, and kind of is like, yeah, that's her existence. It seems very, very, maybe it may be true, but it just seems as if your default is there. I dated the super violent person and I hope they never come back. And that's kind of how life is. It's super sad.
Maybe I feel like realistic. They could have told, or did they? I feel like they could have told Joyce that he was a robot. They don't like need to explain vampires for her to know he was a robot. I feel like that would have been fine.
They definitely don't.
Why can't she know he's a robot?
Then what else would she ask questions about?
He's on the scrap heap of life.
If I found out that like semi-sentient, you know, violent 1950s robots were real, I wouldn't immediately start asking questions about vampires. I would probably assume the insanity stopped more or less there.
Okay. I think...
How would you think the episode should have ended, Mike? Just talking about Thelma Louise and movies and...
No, I mean, it is a super unhealthy way for the show to end. I feel like the episode that comes after this, Bad Eggs, which I've seen, right, like, does a good job of taking the viewer and making them feel comfortable because Joyce has such an important role in that episode, or has a role in that episode where she's not mad at Buffy for what happened in the previous episode. Like, it doesn't exist or doesn't appear to have really happened. I think that, like, they try and take you through it and make it okay that this happened, but, like, that scene in the car when Buffy may have killed her boyfriend, may have killed Ted, or we actually killed Ted at that point, like, that's pretty serious, and they need to talk about it. And the fact that they don't really is really shocking for a show.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think the end, my beef with the end of it, and, you know, this is just my beef with it, is there should have been some, well, I don't want to say Gilmore Girls-esque sort of... summary at the end of it, but there should have been something about Joyce trying to tell Buffy about relationships and violent and good and bad relationships, and trying to give her some real mother-daughter advice after this horrible thing had just happened in their whole lives. And that was like a virtual tornado. So we're all from the Midwest, so we're all comfortable with those analogies. That was a virtual tornado that just tore through their lives. And I think it would have been a more poignant end to the episode if there was something that addressed that, rather than the jokes about rom-coms and horror, and which is all great. Don't get me wrong, but that was my beef at the end of the episode. That's all. I just want to.
I don't know. I feel like I disagree. I feel like in Buffy, the whole point is some crazy shenanigans happens, and Buffy and her friends are able to go back to be, you know, like. It's too much crazy to discuss all the time. Does that make sense? And even though this happened to her mom, it was crazy, and her mom doesn't really have words for it. And we don't know how much time has passed between Ted disappearing and dying and them sitting on the porch. That some of about Buffy is the stuff that's not said, and the fact that they are able to continue even though they've just been through something that has been quite an ordeal. But I do like the point of, because I just, in my brain, always assume that Joyce kind of knows that the world is a crazy place and that somehow her daughter has a place in it that she doesn't fully understand. But they never say, you know, at this point in the show, that's not something that's out loud or ever, because I have no idea. I can't remember.
I would agree, except they spend some time during the episode talking about Buffy killing a normal human, which would be just a boring exposition. And then there are other times where Buffy has these great conversations with Giles. That's where I get most of this emotional or philosophical wrap up. Especially we saw the episode Lie to Me. And at the end of that, there's this great moment where they kind of talk about how crappy life is. And that's the Lie to Me joke. I just kind of wanted a Lie to Me wrap up with her mom. I didn't get it. But I
was kind of surprised that Giles didn't show up. Because when Ted does die, or we believe he dies, I'm just surprised that Giles doesn't come to the door, because he's supposed to be her watcher. He's supposed to be somebody. Also, from the school perspective, something really intense just happened, and he should be there walking her through it and helping mom process this. And he doesn't show up. I kept waiting in this episode when I watched it this week to be like, he really doesn't show up. He doesn't... Like, doesn't he check in with her, but not really.
Yeah, he's not super Giles at that point.
He doesn't really step in. He's kind of like, well, that happens sometimes, Buffy. You should be careful who you push down the stairs. I do, from the parent perspective, when they're sitting on the porch, I feel like there is a conversation they're having because they are very close. But sometimes when you have something really intense to talk about with your kids, you don't say it very well or at all at the time. So it could be that was just the beginning of them processing it and that we're just not privy to that knowledge if we get into the fiction part of it.
Yeah.
I always imagine more happens that I don't get to see.
Mm. Yeah. Writing fan fiction that's not about monsters.
Oh,
but
I
it's
love
about,
the
like,
fan fiction. Yeah.
Emotional therapy.
Oh, there's tons of virtual cutscenes in my mind. Don't give me.
Yeah. That. Okay.
I mean, I would have loved a wrap up where they talked about, you know, things that were banned from the house, and that would include mini pizzas, cookies.
Yeah.
I like the idea of Buffy putting her computer in a box for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
I would have gotten on board with that. I just needed like a little bit of like, yeah, anyways, it's nitpicking. I nitpicked this episode to death already, but is there anything else to say about the episode, Mike? Lead us on.
Nope, that's the end of all the questions here and themes. So we're going to just break to check in with our live audience. Yeah. I see that my sister is watching now.
Yay.
Hey, Beth. But otherwise, people, of course, please ask questions in the Facebook live chat. John will connect with you and we'll bring those questions into the show. But if not, we'll move on to predictions, which is the next segment here. So predictions. I feel like the episode doesn't do a good job explaining where Ted came from. Clearly cyborgs are going to be a thing in the Buffy world since this is the second one that we're seeing. Where are these cyborgs coming from? So my prediction is...
He's technically an android, not a cyborg.
Oh, you just muted yourself before you explained the differences between cyborgs and androids. Can you just please briefly?
Cyborgs are augmented humans, and androids are completely artificial. He was made by a human to mimic himself, but he doesn't have human parts.
Okay, well, there will be a more... No, I appreciate it.
This reminds me of he was a man of bugs, not a bug man.
So clearly Buffy wants to deal with AI or android characters as a thing, doesn't really have a metaverse or like a mythology to explain why they're a part of the Buffy world, because they're not vampires and they have the weirdest stories that like the, Jane robot one is so weird. I feel like they're going to just be more androids. So like, this is a really boring prediction. More androids.
Is one prediction, but you were saying something about finding out like a specific origin story for robots generally, or like how
Ted
do you
want to sophisticated how do you robot? And like, I'm thinking about how much we had to suffer and see these kids try to basically make a Franken person, you know, mm-hmm. like earlier in this season, and like they really struggled to do that. And then Ted is this perfect android, and they would have loved to have made like an alternative human. So that would have been like Ted-like in quality with Cordelia's face. Like, clearly, more androids are going to happen. Are they going to explain how they're made? It sounds like you can't really go into it too deeply. So we probably never learn how androids are made. However, more androids.
Is that a prediction? Are you predicting we will never learn how they're made?
I want us to learn how they're made, but...
Do you think there'll be cyborgs also, separate from androids?
I mean, of course there'll be cyborgs, but this show cares way more about androids.
That's the title of this episode.
There will be cyborgs.
Of course there'll be cyborgs.
Of course there will be.
Yeah, there'll be cyborgs and androids. Of course, this show cares deeply about that kind of conversation. Will we learn how they're made? Yes, but not. They're going to be made differently every time. Just like how vampires are from one gang or another. There'll be just more androids explained in different ways.
So there's no like blanket mythology of robots that you're predicting?
No, I want one, but there isn't one.
Okay, so
I'm disappointed that this one came and there wasn't some weird, like, so the first time we got a Dandroid, it was like they were scanning in information from an old vampire document in order to make the android, this robot appear. like he would manifest it in a computer and then took a computer form. This is just an android from somewhere random. Like, they didn't try and link these stories in some way and make it a demonic android. It's just an android.
So I've got two predictions down for you then. One is we will see more robots. And another one is that we will also see cyborgs, since they are not the same thing.
Yeah, we're going to see cyborgs. Okay. But clearly, they don't have to be connected to a demonic universe. So the explanation for why they exist, it's not because of vampires or demons. It's just like, a Microsoft-like corporation's making androids. Or a mad scientist made them.
Buffy not only lives in a supernatural world, but also like a sci-fi world. Like,
thank you. You articulated that so well. Yes, that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Any other predictions?
I feel like there's an opportunity for the show. I haven't really seen Buffy's diary except for now, where apparently she is keeping track of all of her angel and vampire slaying business. I feel like there's going to be a show opener where Buffy's going to read from her diary. Like, we're going to get the intro instead of, we call the weird like eye popping intros that happen, but like there'll be one that'll be read voiceover from Buffy from her diary.
Okay.
I'm gonna reference this diary back. Ted is never coming back. We're never seeing John Ritter again on this show.
I'm learning that we all do poker face because obviously, I'm practicing it.
Yeah,
I'm trying not to raise my eyebrows or anything. I'm just like,
so no Ted.
Oh, wait, he comes back in an episode called 8 Ways to Kill Your Teenage Daughter.
Yeah, he does.
Okay, so we have three new predictions on the books then. Four, rather. More robots, some cyborgs. We're going to open an episode with a reading from Buffy's diary, and there will be no Ted ever again. So I want to talk about confirmed or denied predictions for this episode.
Thank you.
I've got three or sort of 2.5 here. So let's see. So some of the ones that are definitely going on here is that Jenny will continue. You predicted in season 2, episode 8, that Jenny would continue to bring up her possession, which definitely happens here.
Thank you. I'm glad this is a confirmed because I was concerned that this might have been written off. So thank you.
Uh-huh. And here in season 2, episode 9, in the next episode, you predicted that Cordelia and Xander will continue to make out in season 2, which they do in this episode.
Right. And we'll get into it in Bad Eggs, I'm sure, but it's just like the sexuality, whether or not they have sex, that's another matter the show has to figure out.
Right. So now, along those lines, this is one that is up for debate. Right. So at the end of this episode, we see Giles and Ms. Callender kind of making out pretty hot and heavy through the 4-3 shaped window. And you predicted that in season 2 that they will have sex. Now, obviously, we're never going to see them have sex. But is this television language for they're going to have sex immediately afterwards in the library cage, or like, what should we count this as? They're having sex.
I don't count it.
What would count, Dennis? Like, do they have to like wake up in bed together? Like,
they have to. Well, they're basically doing the same thing that Angel and Buffy are doing, which is just like making out a lot. Like,
right?
We need some statement that they're let's have sex tonight, or something.
Would you accept Jenny and Giles coming to work and both looking a little disheveled?
Yes, I'd accept that.
At the school.
I was watching this movie, The Wraith, with David Yoder for that podcast he's trying to do. And people keep, like, there keep being scenes where you're supposed to think people are having sex, or that's what it's, like, set up as a sex scene, but everybody's pants are still on. And Yoder kept going, like, oh, fucking. And I was like, their pants are on. That's not fucking. Learn how to have sex, David Yoder.
Well, in the classical sense. I think you could also accept that they would have had sex if they're in a relationship. If they acknowledge being in a relationship, I think it'd be safe to say that would be consummated.
Okay, so it sounds like from the panel of judges that we are denying Mike that confirmation.
I'm disappointed in the judge ruling, but I understand.
But you do have two new confirmations, Mike. No new denials. Your overall batting average has therefore gone from an 86, as it was before we just did this podcast. You are now at an 88.2. So you went from like a B to a B plus.
This is fantastic. I want to thank the judges. Thanks, John. Thanks for following that. So
thanks
coming
for
up
framing that in a grade school.
So coming up next is the kill count from Dennis and recommendations.
All right. I counted the four dead wives because Xander saw them. So four dead humans, two vamps got dusted, and one dead robot. And then that's my kill count. So for recommendations, I recommend first Deadly Friend from 1986 because it's a robot killer movie starring Christy Swanson, the original Buffy. She gets killed and then her friend replaces part of her brain with robot parts and she goes on a killing spree for revenge. And she kills the woman from the old lady from the Goonies. And probably you haven't seen this movie, but probably you have seen the GIF where she kills her by throwing a basketball at her head and her head explodes. It's a very popular GIF. I see it all the time. Or GIF. I'm going to use GIF.
Popular in the parts of the internet you travel, at least.
Yeah, it's great. I love head exploding parts of the internet.
You know, everybody, you know that GIF that's all over everywhere, the entire internet with the exploding head?
You've seen it. You've seen it. There's no way you haven't seen it. I've seen it so many times. And then my other recommendation is Colossal, because I just saw that last week. New movie. It's like the Anne Hathaway kaiju movie, because it's also about like a metaphor about a domestic abuse using a giant robot. So it actually tied in, and it's a new movie. So those are my two recommendations. Does anyone else have any?
John Ritter's in It.
Oh, It is a wonderful, fun movie.
There's a really good kids show called Androids that talks a lot about how to build a good android. And the lead, who's about 12, always wears steampunk glasses and has a utility belt. It's on Amazon.
That sounds great.
It's actually a great show, and I watch it with my kiddos.
How about Small Wonder?
Small Wonder.
How about it? I'm not recommending it.
The weird 1980s sitcom with the robot child.
Oh my god! And she wore that red dress with the poofies. Yeah, I saw that like twice in my life, and then I thought it was just a dream. And then I seek people out who have heard of this show. Did it only last a season?
I only ever caught it once or twice, like you're saying, and it like it was one of those things where it shocks you out of your complacency because it's so weird.
It's so weird because she had the panel on her back. That they could like check on her, and I remembered that she thought her dad was an alcoholic and she dumped all his booze in the sink.
That's excellent. Have you guys seen the show?
Yeah, I've seen it. Totally. I don't have seen it.
When I was little, I thought that dress was the best. I was like, oh my god, this girl is fashion on point. Such a good show. Is that on Netflix? I want to find that on Netflix.
We need to have the other podcast where we just watch the things that Dennis recommends or that Mary recommends.
Small Wonders on Amazon. You can buy the season one.
Really?
Only 9 left in stock.
Okay. I can do it right now.
All right. Well, I think otherwise this is the end of this episode. So next week we'll be talking about season one, episode 12. That'll be Bad Eggs. Season two, episode 12, excuse me. Bad Eggs. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. We're going to take a break from the Facebook live stream. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter, Buffy Virgin Pod. There's an Instagram, Buffy Virgin, buffyvirgin.com. And then we just added a recommendations page so you can see all the recommendations through Letterboxd that Dennis and everyone else here on the podcast recommends. It's pretty awesome and easy to follow.
Real quick, Mike, can we give a shout out to Jesse Cameron and Matthew Anthony Washburn, who are both commenting on our live stream.
Hi, Jesse.
Yeah, what is Jesse saying?
Jesse's not a fan of the original Buffy. He says that that's quite terrifying because Dennis brought up the original Buffy. whereas Matthew is making a really sick Beverly Cleary reference.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Ramona in the house.
Ramona is in the house. That's my daughter. So our whole lives are a Beverly Cleary reference.
Cool. We're going to take this off live and we'll probably be back. All right. Thanks, everybody.